Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. For the past 5 years, St. Louis Community College's Workforce Solutions Group has put out an annual report on the state of the St. Louis workforce. It takes a close look at the past, present, and future economic workforce trends, what the strengths and deficiencies in the workforce environment are, and how this information can best be used to strategize and strengthen both the labor market and the regional economy. The information has been compiled through a partnership of business, government, and media leaders and educators. As usual, this year's report has some good news, but also points to some areas where new strategies may be necessary. I'm Don Marsh. With me in studio to discuss this year's State of the St. Louis Workforce Report are Rod Nunn, Vice Chancellor for Economic Development and Workforce Solutions for St. Louis Community College. Bryant Ashworth is Principal for Human Resources at Edward Jones. Herb Hohmeyer, President and Owner at Hohmeyer Precision Manufacturing. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to have you here.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you.
It's great to be here.
Rod, let me begin with you and ask you for a quick overview of this year's report.
Well, thank you. So one of the things that we pride ourselves on is giving information to the community that they might not otherwise receive through the standard monthly jobs report. And so we take a forward-looking approach to the labor market by asking employers what their future hiring trends are. That's one of the survey questions. So let me just start with that and say that cautious optimism is the watchword. More employers, when compared to last year, say that they would increase their workforce. Fewer employers say that they would decrease, but the majority, 57%, says that their hiring outlook would remain the same. So we see a little bit of growth, but certain cautious growth. There's slack in the labor market, meaning that there are more job seekers than there are jobs. And so employers are very selective with respect to experience and education requirements and the demand for knowledge workers. So that would be just a quick and dirty summary.
Well, how does it compare to last year's report?
I think in terms of hiring outlook, in terms of future jobs, more employers do say that they are going to hire when compared to last year, and fewer certainly say that they would cut jobs when compared to last year.
But it's a pretty thin margin, as I saw the numbers. It's not an overwhelming margin.
Yeah, 5 percentage points or something, yeah.
Yeah. Herb and Brian, let me turn to you and get your take on the report. What do you hear, and what impresses you and does not impress you? I'll start with you, Herb.
Well, in our industry, which is the precision manufacturing, we do high-end components for aerospace, semiconductor. The job growth looks to be a 10 to 15% growth. That is also coupled with the fact that if we had the skilled workforce, we work about 10 man years of overtime a year, and we could at least eliminate a little bit of that. So, and a man year overtime is is 2,040 hours. So
your need is skilled workers.
That's
what you're looking for.
Sure.
And you're finding them hard to find.
Very hard to find.
Okay.
Very hard.
Brian, let me turn to you. What did you hear and see in this year's report?
Thanks, Don. And Herb, understand where you're coming from on the skilled side. Ours is a different version of skills. So when he's looking for precision skilling and machinery, we're looking at financial services. So we'll define skills differently. Mm-hmm. Being our corporate office, our home office for our 12,000 branches, we have a wide variety of skills that we need: accountants, internal audit, IT people. So ours covers the realm of skills needed in a traditional white-collar knowledge worker type of organization.
Mm-hmm. Rod, why don't we have the skill? Well, let me go back to you, Brian. Mm-hmm. First of all, are you having trouble filling your slots?
No, the problems that we have problems filling will be the technical positions. People have a depth of technical knowledge, like in a particular product or a particular technology and information systems or information technology. Other than that, we're not having a difficult time finding people.
You have a full slate of 12,000 employees or whatever it is that the number you gave me a moment ago?
We do.
Okay. All right. Rod, why then is Herb having problems and Edward Jones is not?
I think that's a complex question. I would say that for advanced manufacturing, precision manufacturing, I think we have some stereotypes in the community at large about manufacturing that we need to continually address. Most of the manufacturing that remains in St. Louis, because if you look at the trend lines over the last 20 years, manufacturing has been declining in jobs and service occupations have been increasing in jobs. But most of the manufacturing that's left is the high technology, the precision manufacturing. But most individuals, kids coming out of the K-12 system and adults that are looking to transition to new jobs don't really understand what's involved with manufacturing these days. And that's part of the problem, I would think.
Want to add to that, Herb? I know that you want to use the word precision because that really is a difference here.
Yes, the manufacturing of old, which probably was our grandparents, it no longer survives. So what we look at is our tolerances that we hold have to be down in the millionths of an inch, and so we have to have the skill set to hold those tolerances. So we really are on an active search for the understanding of that from our employees.
Well, where do you go to find them?
Well, I can tell you, we just ran an ad for a programmer, and we got in the St. Louis area here, and we got a response, and the gentleman is from out of the country, and that's the only response that we had. So there is a shortage of programmers for which we use NX8.
You better explain what that is.
Okay, it's our machining program, which is a Unigraphics NX8, which we program our machine tools with.
So it's a drop in the bucket. You've had one response to your ad, and how many spots do you have to fill?
Well, we currently have two spots open in that.
So it's tough going out there and finding them.
It is. It is.
Brian, are most of the people that you look for college graduates?
Most are, yes. Uh-huh. Not all, but most.
And what sort of training do you do once you get your hands on them?
Pretty extensive. Our training is not only skill-based training, but it's also cultural-based training. Jones views our culture as being our version of a competitive advantage, so we'll spend a lot of time acculturating them into focusing on our client, our core values, and those types of things. Then when they pass through that period of time where they're learning the culture, then they're assigned to their respective areas that they were actually hired and recruited for, and that's when the technical training will begin based on whether it's our systems that we might use from an information system standpoint, whether it's the vendors that we use, because every little functional area will have some differences to it. So they'll move in on that aspect, and we'll train them on those.
Herb, what about training in your company?
Our employees are all associate degrees. They will either come out of a trade school or a community college. They then will go into our system, which they start at as a saw operator and move their way up to become machinists. So, and we do extend. It's about a 2-year program inside of our facility.
Rod, is Brian the exception and his company the exception to the rule here? And is Herb in his situation an exception to the rule? Are these pretty standard comments?
I think you find a mix of responses among the employer community about their ability to find skilled workers. You know, obviously, you look at St. Louis and you think about information technology, financial services, biotechnologies, and those types of drivers of our economic competitiveness. And there are that because there's a strong pool of skilled workers already in the region with those types of competencies. To a lesser extent, the clusters in advanced manufacturing, for example, and coupled with some of the thought processes that our students have and what they want to study, many folks don't think of manufacturing as a STEM field, for example. And there's just some corrections we need to make. But I don't think, based on the data, I mean, I think you would find a mix of responses across the industry sectors with respect to hiring needs and skill deficiencies.
Just to clarify, for those who don't know what the STEM skills are, we're talking about science, technology, engineering, and math. And as I mentioned to you off the air, we've done a number of programs on that. The United States has really fallen far behind many countries, including some that might be considered less developed than this one, in those particular skill areas.
Absolutely, and that's led St. Louis Community College to actually invest in programming. And, for example, we have a new precision machining program that's based off of some entry-level STEM competencies and the technical competencies required to perform at a company like Herb's. And we, for a number of years, have had a biotechnology program. And so, yeah, that's been a priority of ours for the last 4 or 5 years, just to try to make a dent and do our part, at least in the middle skill area.
This is how you're using the information you're gathering, the community colleges. Is what should we be teaching in order to provide the skills that are necessary?
Absolutely. Every year we look at the data and we use it internally to enhance our mix of programs and services. And so that's caused us to change. In fact, the other day I had just learned that in our new faculty orientation process, they're looking at how to better teach soft skills as a part of the curriculum. And so that's been a direct result of the State of St. Louis workforce. But, yeah, the mix of programming that we offer is certainly influenced by the research.
Soft skills being what?
Soft skills we define as those personal effectiveness competencies that are learned over a lifetime and honed and reinforced in the education environment and in the workplace, such as, you know, work ethic, interpersonal communication, dependability, reliability, and those types of things.
Yeah. Herb, how will you use this information that is included in the report?
We'll use it so we can adjust ourselves to on our recruiting of employees and stuff. I wanted to add, too, that the NTMA, which is the National Tooling Machine Association, there are 50 member companies here in St. Louis. They're mostly small businesses like ours. But we have teamed with St. Louis Community College in order – they're using our NTMAU, which is an online training, which ties in exactly with what we need. They're doing the we'll do the online training with NTMAU, and then the hands-on will be on in their facility or in the facility like ours. Mm-hmm. So that is a good – teaming with education and manufacturing has always been a high priority of ours.
Brian, how will you use the information?
Well, we use it in multiple ways. The aspect of workforce planning, so it ultimately comes back to there's an opening somewhere, whether the opening is because someone left or whether it's growth or reduction in workforce. But we'll use it from a workforce planning perspective. Don, we'll try to focus on what turnover we're going to have, where it might be, and try to use it to get ahead of the curve so we're meeting our clients' expectations, not falling behind because we've got this gap in somebody filling that particular role. It's one of the ways we would use it.
Have you found it useful in the past?
I'm not sure. That's a great question. I know we've used it at times. I don't know how to the degree we've used it. It's something that we've committed to a little bit more this year because we're starting to see the value of it to a greater extent.
Of course, you're sitting in the catbird seat. You're in pretty good shape compared to many other businesses and companies in the area.
Yeah, true. But just to clarify, not everything's in good shape. We have some skill gaps that we can't fill that we end up having to go significantly outside for and have some gaps in our employment line of sight for our clients. But you know, we do have those, but generally not.
What are those gaps that you need to fill?
For example, a specific one would be on information technology and Java programmers. It's just a hot job. It's the way technology's gone, and we have a very large computer system, and so we need Java programmers. We just don't have them. We need product specialists. So most of our positions will be general positions, henceforth our relationship with St. Louis Community College. We have some that are focused on specific products that you as an investor might want to ensure that you have, and we need product knowledge.
Hey, Don, if I could just jump in here a second. Your earlier question about how employers use the research, I think, is an important one. We've sort of wondered about how the community in general use the research. And just to set the record straight here, we get lots of inquiries from folks who are like consultants in workforce planning, community organizations who are applying for grants, other educational institutions. And if you look at the mix of audience who actually attend when the information is presented, you see a list of who's who and the types of organizations that are not only employers but community-based organizations and other educators. So we, as a part of the community, kind of see that as our role to kind of speak to the labor market every year.
Yeah. I have to take a break now, gentlemen. Let's do that. We are talking about the St. Louis Workforce Report, the fifth that has been put out by the St. Louis Community College and the Workforce Solutions Group there, and what their findings have been and how this information can be utilized by employers, employees, and people looking for jobs as well. My guests in studio are Rod Nunn, Vice Chancellor for Economic Development and Workforce Solutions for St. Louis Community College. Brian Ashworth is the Principal for Human Resources at Edward Jones. And Herb Hohmeyer is President and Owner at Hohmeyer Precision Manufacturing. We'd like to get you into this conversation. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there affected by all of what we'll be talking about today. Give us some input from your point of view. What challenges do you face and do you see facing today's workforce? Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you'd like to send us a tweet, we will take that as well at STL On Air. Back in just a moment to continue our conversation. This is St. Louis On the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our general conversation on the workforce situation here in the St. Louis region. And it's a regional discussion that we are having. It's the result of the St. Louis Workforce Report that has been put out by the St. Louis Community College. And I have with me in studio Rod Nunn, who is Vice Chancellor for Economic Development and Workforce Solutions for that institution. Brian Ashworth is with Edward Jones. He's with us. Herb Hohmeyer has his own company, Hohmeyer Precision Manufacturing, also with us in studio. Rod, let me go back to you. And we've talked about the need for skilled workers, and I don't think that catches people terribly by surprise. But there are a lot of unskilled workers out there. How does this report address them and their needs?
Right. And so one of the things we look at in addition to the employer survey is sort of what's available in the public labor market and census data domains. And over half of the region's working age population has no educational attainment beyond high school. You know, some college, no degree, but no post-secondary credential. And so we speak to that every year. And one of the things we asked employers this year was trying to capture some of the national perspective and how it relates to St. Louis is, you know, when you're making a hiring decision and you're looking at a degreed professional versus someone with an industry certification, because we need to start encouraging people to get the short-term certificates that have value in the labor market as well. And so college is not such a far-fetched idea for everyone, you know. In fact, our precision machining program, it's a certificate of specialization that can be earned in a year and resulting in a NEMS certification, which is valued in the advanced manufacturing arena. And so we're trying to do more and more certificate programs as a way to get people skilled up in our labor market.
Herb, is 1 year enough to train the people that you need?
That's introductory to bring them to us. They run through our program. But it is very helpful to get the 1 year. It at least teaches them the basics.
That gets them through the door.
Through the door.
Yeah. I want to go right to the phones because I think Milo in St. Louis has a point here that is relevant to this part of the conversation, so let's bring him in. Go ahead, Milo. You're on the air.
Hello. This is Milo.
Go ahead.
I was wondering if the businesses could go straight to the high school or even middle school. Maybe they can set up, they can work together with local businesses and go straight to there instead of colleges, junior colleges. Because I think people are not even aware of what kind of jobs are out there. And if you just, you know, show them at like an early age, something they can shoot for, or at least just put them in the back of their mind, I think that would be pretty helpful. I know in like Switzerland, I think, don't they have, or Germany, they have a lot of businesses work hand in hand with schools like very closely. And I think it seems like you started now, for instance, someone from high school, like 4 years from now, I mean, they can start working. That's not too far.
Milo, thank you so much for the call. Herb, you were nodding your head during this this phone call.
Well, we do host a pizza party for it's either 6th or 7th graders and 8th graders for the local elementary schools around us, just to show them what is here. You know, you have a clean laboratory-type facility that you're manufacturing in. And maybe if we plant the seed in one, we've got a win situation there.
Brian, what do you think? Does Edward Jones partner with the high schools in any sense, or should they?
It's a great question. It actually came up last week in the conference. We used to. Jones used to do a lot of work with high schools, several high schools had defined programs, and a lot of our leaders came through those programs, and I'm not sure why it attrited away. It's a great question. Rod and I talked after the conference last week about maybe we should investigate that.
Rod, it seems to make – you're the educator. It seems to make a lot of sense.
It absolutely does. The caller makes a good point in that there's just an information gap with young people in terms of being aware. And I think there are career counselors who do a great job in the middle schools and the high schools, but you know, there's a lot of information out there, and we need to teach people to become more literate about what they're reading. One of the tools we just introduced speaks directly to the caller's question, and it's a tool called Career Coach. And it would allow middle schoolers and high schoolers to go right to our website, click on the Career Coach button, type in whatever occupation they think they might be interested in, and they'll get a wealth of targeted information about the wages, what it takes to become, professionally educated and trained, real-time jobs that are posted in our labor market about that search. And so the idea would be to kind of take this kind of information that we have in the state of the St. Louis workforce to simplify it, put it in a fingertip so a younger person or an older person can go and look, learn more about it, and figure out exactly what steps they can take to get trained.
You know, I've often thought and said and heard it said that I would not like to be 20 years old today and going out and looking for a job because of the economy. What impact has that had on all of what we're talking about here, the recession? We're pulling out of it, supposedly. The impact it's had.
That's an interesting question. Actually, I was looking at the data earlier, and our data shows that younger individuals and males are more adversely impacted by unemployment. And it's just a byproduct of a tighter labor market. And so the more older, experienced workers were able to find opportunities. And then some of the losses we've experienced in manufacturing and construction, for example, were industries and occupations that were dominated by males. And so that's really is what happened.
And with the older, more experienced workers, you've got the actual skills and also the soft skills that you were talking about.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We have a question here that has come through the tweet process, asking Brian to elaborate on what it means by finding people with technical skills. The tweet reads, "Problem filling tech? I have tech experience. Apply for tech jobs. Just get ignored. Problem is HR screeners are closed-minded." I think this probably could go to both you and to her. Not that you're closed-minded, but that, the problem filling those jobs. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's interesting. Appreciate the question. Appreciate the response on all fronts. Surprisingly enough, our screeners aren't HR people. They're business people who do the ultimate screening, both on the front end and the back end, meaning when resumes first come in and then when ultimate hiring decisions are made. I don't know what the tweeter has from a technical skill standpoint, so it's a little generic to respond, but we're looking for multiple technical skills when it comes to our IT function, and I can share with you the sessions that we sit through with our peers, business peers, whether they're smaller organizations that may use smaller computer systems, larger organizations, we're all having a dearth of talent for specialized technology degrees.
It's so ironic, and I understand, again, the idea of the skill sets that are necessary, but with an unemployment rate of, 7.5%, to think that you're having problems, all of you having problems filling certain jobs, or there's so many people who are hurting out there. Did you want to respond to that tweet, Herb?
Sure. When we always give a mechanical aptitude test, and you have to score at least a 66% on it. That is the recommendation in our industry in order to be considered to go into our industry. So, if you get 66% on a mechanical aptitude test, then we'll start you through the process.
But you have to have certain standards, obviously,
right,
before you.
Right.
Otherwise, it's a waste of time.
Correct.
All right.
I would just advise a tweeter also, highly skilled individuals, and I don't know what processes they use for job search, but one of the things we usually ask in our report is where the candidates are sourced from. And word of mouth has always been the top sort of response. And so it's important to network in the job search community and find professional networks where you can meet people who can help you get referrals. And those are very important.
Yeah. Don, can I come back?
Of course.
This is, again, back to the tweeter in particular, and it's not directed at him, but you've talked about those soft skills. Quite often what we run into are people, and these aren't just technical information technology people who have the technical skills. We're talking about product knowledge or customer service or whatever it might be, technical skills. They may have the technical skills, but unless they can relate and understand the business and turn that skill into something that is usable by our clients, by our investors, they're probably not going to make it through our assessment process, front end or anywhere through it. So it's not just about the technical skills. It's about the full skill base that the person brings. And that's why the experience piece tends to play a little bit harder.
I've got that. I think Sharon in Highland, Illinois, wants to address this part of the discussion. Sharon, thanks for waiting. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, hello.
Hi.
Hi. I teach at one of the trade schools around here where they get the certification. I work with a lot of the HVAC students. What I noticed, and I totally agree with the soft skills, a lot of them are coming in, don't have the soft skills that will help land that job and keep the job because they might not have experienced it as a child growing up. Their cultures were different. Like, you know, punctuality might not have been important. Education wasn't important. They may be the first one that have even gone to college, let alone, you know, graduated high school or even got their GED. A lot of the students are GED students, dropped out of high school for various reasons. But what I'm finding there's a lot of very intelligent kids out there that, and they're dedicated, they're hard workers, they take the bus system that is very complicated and go to get to school because they want to get this certificate because 1 year is attainable for them. It's broken down in 5-10 week sessions. So I have one student that's just finishing this week, his first 10 weeks. He had no idea. I mean, seriously, his math was probably like a second grade level because he just never got, you know, like the multiplication, fractions, anything. And he studies on his own at home, on the bus. He learns his multiplication tables. I mean, they're very dedicated, but they're lacking in soft skills. And I guess my question is, and I also teach I teach math and computer concepts mostly. My question is, where should I keep my focus? Because I always like to take classes to keep educating myself. And what, you know, should I get more computer classes so I can teach in that area? Are there classes that teach soft skills? I've never seen that. I mean, there's ethics classes.
Well, let's turn to Rod. Sharon, I think we have your point, and time is beginning to move along. Let's turn to Rod Nunn on that. I think he wants to respond.
Well, first of all, thank you for bringing up the important sort of reasons behind the lack of soft skills in some of today's students. You mentioned some of the cultural issues, the first-generation college students. Don and I have talked in past years about the generational differences in the workforce and how technology has changed the way the expectations and how younger people define soft skills. But to answer your questions, I would challenge you to look at experiential learning, work-based learning, making sure your students have internship opportunities to interact with employers and co-ops and different experiences that will require them to work in team environments and just to mimic the workplace as a part of your educational programs. And most employers love to work with educational institutions on those types of approaches.
All right, then, Brian, you look like you wanted to
say. I'm just going to reiterate what Rod said. Jones takes a keen interest in those organizations. We have some very strong relationships with some local colleges and universities to continue to develop the technical skills, but to broaden it beyond just the technical expertise, to be able to interrelate with each other, to be able to take a lot of information, turn it into something usable that it provides value to our financial advisors who then provide the value to our clients. It's just not as simple as saying technical skills. You've got to bring more.
Rod, you mentioned cultural differences, which may play a role in the soft skills department. But I would assume, and I'll make the point that I suspect, that it's not just, you know, lower socioeconomic problem, that this soft skill deficiency really works across the entire spectrum of young people today.
Absolutely, particularly with technology, and I can use my own two sons. I have a 14-year-old and 11-year-old. They expect to get everything quick in the microwave. They spend as much time as I would allow them on the video games and they prefer to communicate using text message. And as a parent, if I don't reinforce the types of behaviors that I know are expected in the real world, they're going to be lacking. And so I also expect the schools that they go to embed those types of behaviors as well.
Well, it starts in the home, needless to say, but a greater role could be played by schools.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's take another call. This one from Richard, calling from St. Louis. Richard, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. And hello to Dr. Nunn, with whom I've talked. My question is on the side of the school offering in-depth training on software needed for design and manufacturing. And the example I will give is a software called ProEngineer, which is three-dimensional solid-state modeling, which is a software that enables a person, say, to design a very complicated hand tool, like a drill or something like that, and then it comes with a laser cutting machine which will make the prototype. The prototype is made out of a rosin or a polymer. The cut is made by a laser, so a student working can make the hand tool, and then they pull out the model, and then the master mechanic can sit with the student and said, well, you did this right, you did that right, or this hole has to be moved over. Now that rosin cutting laser type tool is several thousand dollars. One of the big universities in St. Louis teaches the software, but all they have is people sitting at terminals. They don't actually get into the design of the prototype. And it seems to me that if a school like Community College is going to teach rapid prototyping, but if they did it in connection with the actual building of a polymer prototype, and then the student could actually sit down with a thing in his hands and go over it with a master designer, that if Community College does that, they will be about 18 kilometers ahead of this other university that just teaches the software. That's my comment.
Richard, thank you so much for it. Before I go for a response, I'm going to take a break because I don't want to interrupt the response with it. It'll give us a chance to figure out exactly how far 18 kilometers is, by the way, but that's another story. We'll come back and continue this discussion and take more of your calls. We have some lines open at 382-8255, 382-TALK. You can also send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We're going to be continuing our discussion on the St. Louis Workforce Report, which was put out by St. Louis Community College and which takes a look at where we are and where we're going with regard to our regional workforce here. My guest in studio, Rod Nunn, Vice Chancellor for Economic Development and Workforce Solutions for St. Louis Community College. Brian Ashworth is Principal for Human Resources at Edward Jones. Herb Hohmeyer, President and Owner at Hohmeyer Precision Manufacturing. We have to answer the question from our last caller. But first, I want to give you some of the stories that our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. The Missouri State Board of Education met this morning to consider future actions regarding unaccredited school districts. A House committee held its final meeting about the controversial scanning of driver's license data, a practice Governor Nixon subsequently banned. And an environmental group is suing the company responsible for an under-construction pipeline, which would run southwesterly near Quincy, Illinois, and through northern Missouri. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. And now to go back to that question, I'll start with you, Rod, with regard to institutions such as yours being able to provide actual hands-on training as well as the online training.
Of course, at community colleges, we pride ourselves in applied learning. And to be specific, at our Emerson Center for Engineering and Manufacturing on our Florissant Valley campus, we've had a lot of planning conversations around getting more into the rapid prototyping and the additive manufacturing. That's a little bit beyond my expertise level, but I appreciate the intelligence. Would invite the caller to reach out to me, and maybe we can get him in touch with some of our engineering faculty, because that sounds like something that we're beginning to do anyway.
Any comment, Herb or Brian, on that?
He's referring to it. It's not a new process, but it's becoming very popular, is where they lay down a bed of it could be any of the super high-temp alloys, the stainless steels, and then you take the solid model And it's a laser is laser fusing the particles of the material together and actually producing a part without machining it.
Mm-hmm. That, he's talking about that with regard to what can be learned online. Is that what we're
The process he's talking about is creating – when you create with – he was talking about creating a design or a wireframe in Pro-E and then moving it on to a laser machine that produces the part. And that would be additive manufacturing.
Okay. Well, once again, we'll encourage that caller to contact Rod at St. Louis Community College. Brian, let me turn to you with regard to this whole online education thing. Are you running into this as a positive or a negative? Is it, there are online college degrees now and a lot of online training. Good for you or maybe not so good?
Well, it's, again, a topic we talked about a couple of weeks ago at the conference. Preferably, and please hear that as only as a preference, not as an absolute, Jones prefers the more traditional education because it provided for those soft skills to be developed in college, right? If you're sitting at your computer by yourself at home, you're probably not interacting with anybody other than through words, or some of the newer technology might be through video conferencing. Whereas if you're sitting in a classroom with 6 or 8 or 10 other people, you're sharing ideas, you're working together, you're learning together, you're interacting together, you take your breaks probably together. So it builds those interpersonal skills, those relationship skills. Rod called them soft skills earlier. It builds that. So we tend to prefer a more traditional education because it's broader than what you learn in the textbook.
Herb, does it work for you?
It does work for us. We use the online training for our getting the math side of it, the learning, the engineering side of it. And then the hands-on is done in our own facility. It allows us to mold our machinists to the Homeyer way, and then we can we get ahead with them if we can use the online with it. But we also use the traditional too. Not everybody can do it.
The Homeyer way, otherwise known as the only way, right? How about you, Rod? I mean, this is a competitor of yours in a sense, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, we offer some online programs as well, and so one of the reasons we asked that question this year, asking employers how they value online degrees versus traditional degrees, was just to kind of get a sense of where the St. Louis market was. We knew nationally that employers were becoming more and more comfortable with online degrees, and what we found this year is there's a direct correlation between the level of the degree program and how employers view that as compared to online programs. So for the higher degree professionals, most employers prefer the traditional degree. But I would caution us not to discount the hybrid approach where there's a mixture, of learning approaches embedded in programs where students come together every so often during the semester, or some of the classes in the program are taught face-to-face and others are taught online. And I think we see that with employers when they scale up their own workforce. They use a mixed methods approach.
But isn't that where it's going? I mean, the price of a college education today is almost prohibitive, and it is prohibitive for a large number of people who would like to go. We all know about the debt issues that are created, and the fact, by the way, that some of these kids who've gone to college for 4 years and have $100,000 in debt can't find a job when they get out. Isn't online education where it's going?
Well, certainly online education has increased exponentially over the years. We, of course, at the community college pride ourselves on affordable, quality education. But we believe online is part of the mix. Now, these massive open online courses, MOOCs, there's a lot of knowledge that's available for free for individuals to learn. But some of that is being commoditized, obviously. But we have to find our niche as a higher education institutions on where the value is. And there's an awful lot of value. For example, you don't want a registered nurse working on you who hasn't had some clinical experience, some direct applied knowledge. And there are certain professions where that will never be replaced. And certainly the interaction in a team environment is very important in an educational setting. So any online program that ignores that won't have graduates who are competitive in the marketplace.
What was the biggest surprise to you in this year's report and your findings?
I don't think I had any major surprises. you know, some of the newer things we looked at were very interesting when we asked employers how they valued experience. You know, specifically, if you had to make a choice in the hiring process between an experienced worker with 5 or 10 years of experience versus a new graduate with all the new technical knowledge, you know, how do you value that? How do you value online versus traditional? How do you value traditional education and degrees versus industry certifications? I mean, all of those were new pieces of data for us that confirmed, one, that industry certifications are on the rise, and that online education is here to stay, and more employers are becoming comfortable with that. So that's going to challenge us to think about how the mix of programs that we offer at the college.
Did you get into any of the connecting issues, I guess I would call them, that relate to employment, minimum wage, right to work, and some of the things that are generating a lot of conversation these days?
No, we did not. We did test one politically charged issue, and that was the Affordable Care Act.
That's what I wanted to bring up next. Yeah.
Right. And so we were, and thank you for bringing that up. I guess there was some surprise in the responses to that question. You know, we just sort of asked employers, will the Affordable Care Act affect their employing levels, full-time, part-time, and the health benefits that they offer? And right in the middle of our survey, the Obama administration announced that they were delaying the provision, one of the provisions, important provisions to employers in that act. But I was sort of surprised that 60% of employers said that the Affordable Care Act would not impact their employing levels, full or part-time, or the level of benefits offered. I think that came as a surprise.
I think it would come to a surprise to a lot of people, given the conversation. Herb, what about you? How do you look at that? I mean, that's certainly going to affect you.
Well, we're a 55-employee company, so we just fall over the threshold. We meet the standards. I know that it's going to cost us in the long run, but we've always kept our health care benefits at the highest level that we possibly could. But it's going to affect us. It's going to affect a lot of smaller businesses too.
Yeah, Brian, this is less of an issue for you and the company your size, I would guess.
No, I would. You know, I'll probably condition Rod's response, or at least our response to the question that was asked, which is, we don't think it'll impact us now. We certainly know it's going to impact us in the future. We just don't know enough yet to know how. We currently provide health care for our full-time associates. What we do know is that the Affordable Health Care Act may limit the types of people that we can employ. So part-timers may not be employed as much by us as they have in the past. And that may or may not be a good thing, right? Because not everyone wants to work part-time. But there are a lot of people who would prefer to work part-time, for whatever reasons. And if the Affordable Care Act restricts our ability to meet our clients' needs because it doesn't allow us to hire part-time people, because that forces us into a higher cost model, which ultimately gets passed back to us as consumers, it's going to have a big impact on us.
But by the same token, it would provide an avenue for those people to get health insurance.
Potentially, depending on where that cutoff is, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, where do we go from here, Rod? We've got all this information that you've compiled. What happens now?
Well, what happens inside of the college is a couple of things. I mean, we take the information. We have internal planning conversations. You know, we take the data about, you know, the skills requirements, the employment niches that show promise, and we begin to look at our internal programming and begin to tweak and enhance. We're hopeful that the same thing happens out in the community, whereas we'll be working with NTMA, for example, on precision machining. A new program just started yesterday. And so we'll be looking at the performance of those graduates in the workplace, tweaking our program according to this data, and it's real-time information. But we also hope that community-based organizations and other folks who see the data use it as we like to say, better thread the needle, to improve the threading of the needle between supply and demand of workers and skills.
How quickly can you, as an institution, react to findings that, need to be addressed?
One of the strengths of community colleges, and so we have the ability to turn the ship very, very quickly. And what we would do, we have an R&D department in our non-credit division, which I oversee, called the Workforce Solutions Group. So we find a market that has some significant demand. We can connect a instructional designer with a subject matter expert from industry and have a new program up and running in a couple of months. we will use that program, tweak it, and then we can move it to the traditional model after we've worked out the kinks. In terms of existing programs, to do enhancements to those, we all have those programs have advisory boards who are some are very active, and so it's just a matter of getting that through the curriculum process. That's a little bit slower, but certainly we pride ourselves on being able to be very responsive to the labor market.
Herb, is there a next step for you as a result of what you've learned through this report?
I think that it'll help us to position ourselves for the growth of our company. But I also wanted to add that we're seeing a reshoring effort right now.
A
reshoring, which is
reassuring. Okay.
Reshoring. But that's what they're calling work that's coming back from offshore.
Oh, okay. Thank you for clarifying.
Okay. That. So we're seeing a reshore. And I'll tell you that one of our customers has just contacted us at two jobs that we had lost 5 or 6 years ago to go offshore are now coming back to us. So I think you're going to see a growth of the need for skilled workforce. And I think it's going to continue to grow because of this reshoring effort.
What is causing this reshoring effort, and is it widespread, do you know?
It is widespread. We're hearing that. I mean, I'm part of the national organization of the NTMA, and our members across the country are seeing a reshoring effort by the OEMs. We think that, well, what it is China is now, or the offshore, is getting to be, we're competitive with them at our prices, so.
All right. Well, that's encouraging news. I think that's one of the real positives come out of this discussion.
But it's just the high technology work that's coming back. So, I mean, you're still going to have to really focus on the technology side of it.
Right. And Ryan, what's next for you? Do you see as a result of this report?
Several things, Don. Thank you. We see the whole recruiting piece. So we now have some more demographic information on those people who are out there, employed and unemployed. Those who are looking for jobs, those are coming out of education. We look at the demographic piece. So while it's a snapshot in time, when we look at it over time, we'll see trends from an employment perspective for our associates, trends on what our clients confront, those people who invest with us. Workforce planning, as we talked, that piece to be able to look in the future and see what skill sets are available and how does that impact our ability to meet our clients' needs. And surprisingly, much more tactically, we have 7 or 8 local colleges and universities that we have strategic relationships with. It allows us to go back and work with the St. Louis Community College, for example, to say, hey, here's what's being turned out. Here's what our needs are from a skill set perspective. Here's what our needs are in the future. How do we help St. Louis Community College quickly adapt to the skill sets that we're going to be hiring?
You know, we've done programs recently on the employment problems that are being faced by veterans as they come back. Does that work into this equation at all, Rod, as far as you're concerned?
Absolutely. When you look at, you know, the working age population, for example, and one subset of that is veterans. And so one of the things we've done as a community college is created a veterans coordinator role to work with a variety of organizations in the community to be more veterans friendly as a college. And that means a variety of things in terms of how we service veterans, looking at their prior learning and see if we can grant credit and things of that nature. But very important issue.
Well, they have, and they do have expanded skill sets as a result of their service, and also those soft skills that we've talked about, I think have probably been dealt with fairly effectively.
Absolutely.
Agreed?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We have Edward Jones has targeted specifically hiring veterans for those specific reasons, Don. Their ability to integrate data, their decision-making ability, their ability to work as a team, you know, make decisions individually but also as a team, their relationships, again, those soft skills, the relationship skills, they're very good at it, extraordinarily good, and we want to hire a lot of them.
Well, I hope you do, because there are a lot of them that need to be hired. We've got 2 minutes left, and none of us has a crystal ball, but let me go around the table and just ask. I'll start with you, Rod. On the basis of what you're learning over the last 5 years, and specifically now, what's your forecast for our economic well-being over the next 12 months?
Well, I think the effort by the Regional Chamber Association to focus on degree attainment is very important. We see employers really, really demanding knowledge workers going forward, and that's going to allow us to be a more competitive region in terms of economic development. And so we've got gaps to fill. We've got to figure out how we make education affordable, accessible, and offering it in the modalities that for example, adult learners need. And so, you know, looking forward, I think we've got some challenges ahead of us in how we get more more adults credentialed and degreed in our region, and that's something that we're focused on.
Are we going to reach the objective of having a higher percentage by 2020? I think they're looking for, what is it, 10% or something.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, we hope so, and I think the community college will play an important role in that.
All right. And Herb, what about you?
I would say that we've learned that manufacturing is not dead. It's just transformed itself into a very high technology job.
Now the next challenge is to find those skilled workers that you need to be able to expand and create even more jobs.
Correct.
All right. Brian? Yeah,
Don, thanks. You had mentioned earlier about what was surprising in the workforce objective. We found the overall employment diversity in our region, that we have so many different employment lines. So we find that that is something that you that we can leverage as we go forward, because that allows us to play to a diverse clientele. The workforce in our region is pretty skilled. We found that out too. Several colleges, universities, and our economy overall remains strong and slowly improving. Not someone said earlier rocket boosters, but slowly improving. All those things seem to align to a relatively healthy next 12 months.
Well, let's hope it all aligns into just that, a relatively healthy and even more than relatively healthy. But thank you, gentlemen. I want to thank you, Rod Nunn, for being with us again. See you next year.
Thank you, sir.
Brian Ashworth, thank you for being with us.
Thanks,
Edward Jones and Herb Hohmeyer from Hohmeyer Precision, thank you so much for being with us. Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about the Missouri History Museum's exhibit celebrating the 250th anniversary of St. Louis. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. This program is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.